Welcome to World Affairs, the weekly broadcast of the World Affairs Council. I'm Jane Wales, CEO. This week's episode focuses on Russia, and we'll hear from Anatoly Antonov, who's the ambassador of the Russian Federation to the United States, and David Holloway, who's a professor of international history and political science at Stanford University. This event was recorded in San Francisco before a World Affairs audience, and this broadcast is made possible by the generous support of Chevron.
My name is Carla Thorson, and I'm the Senior Vice President for Programs at World Affairs. And we're delighted to have all of you joining us this evening. Welcome, members of World Affairs, guests. A word about our program this evening. Ambassador Antonov will offer formal remarks. And following his remarks, he will have a conversation with and take your questions with Professor David Holloway. So it's now my pleasure to introduce our guests for this evening. First, our moderator, David Holloway, is the Raymond A. Spruance Professor of International History and a Professor of Political Science and a Senior Fellow at the Freeman Spogli Institute at Stanford University. David was co-director of the Center for International Security and Cooperation from 1991 to 97 and director of FSI from 1998 to 2003. Since joining the faculty in 1986, he has served as chair and co-chair of the International Relations Program and as associate dean in the School of Humanities and Social Sciences. So I can't think of anyone better to be our moderator this evening. And he'll be talking with our honored guest, His Excellency Anatoly Antonov. Ambassador Antonov is a career diplomat who has served for more than 30 years in both the Soviet and Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. From 2002 to 2004, he was the ambassador at large of the Russian Foreign Ministry, and from 2004 to 2011, he served as the director of the Department of Security and Disarmament. Mr. Antonov also held the position of Deputy Minister of Defense from 2011 to 2016. Prior to his role as the Russian ambassador to the U.S., Antonov was the Deputy Foreign Minister of the Russian Federation. On August 21st of this year, President Vladimir Putin appointed Anatoly Antonov extraordinary and plenipotentiary of the Russian Federation to the United States, and concurrently permanent observer of the Russian Federation at the Organization of American States in Washington. It is his first visit here to the Bay Area and here in San Francisco, so I hope you will all join me in welcoming him tonight and Professor Holloway for this very interesting conversation. Please.
Thank you very much. For me, it's a great honor to be here. I would like to thank the World Affairs Council for this opportunity to be with you. And it's very important to discuss a very burning issue. What should we do together? Do we need each other? Are we partners? Are we enemies? Who we are, the United States and the Russian Federation? I don't want to blame anybody for the current situation in Russian-American relations, but today, by the way, it's the first official remarks by me as an ambassador of Russian Federation to the United States. I'm not a magician.
Mr. Ambassador, I want you to stop killing gays in Chechnya. Russia is killing gay people in Chechnya. I want the gay people left alone in Chechnya. We need to protect gay people. Yes, I will leave. Stop killing gay Chechens. Stop killing gay Chechens. Stop.
You can see how our relations are complicated. It seems to me that everybody has a right to explain what he wants, how he can see, how he sees the current situation. It seems to me that I also have a right to convey a few remarks to you, trying to explain how we in the Russian Federation understand the current situation in Russian-American relations. And I would like also to explain you how we understand the importance of Russian-American relations. I don't want to offend anybody. I would like to be candid with you. I would like to be transparent with you. I hope that there will be another opportunity for me to come here. I hope that I will not disappoint you, and you will invite me once more. Now, as it was announced, it will be official remarks, and then I will be ready to discuss any issue of interest, including that I heard from that guy. Dear colleagues, over the recent years, the Russian-American relations have suffered severe degradation and are far from their best shape. Today, we are faced with the aftermath of an unprecedented campaign to discredit Russia as an attempt to punish our country for protecting its interest and pursuing independent foreign policy. Regrettably, relations between our countries are still being politicized and abused. Russia is being groundlessly accused of meddling into the United States elections, as well of other domestic and external problems of the United States. The expulsion of Russian diplomats, seizure and search of our diplomatic property, along with the removal of state flags of the Russian Federation, infringement of rights of the Russian media, all these hostile actions are destroying the foundation of the Russian-American cooperation. The Russian threat is constantly used as a pretext to strengthen the so-called transatlantic solidarity, which takes forms of military planning. A clear example is all the hype around military exercise Zapad 2017, conducted by Russia and Belarus in September. We were accused of preparing for invasion of the Baltic countries, for occupation of Ukraine. There were rumors that once the exercise was over, the Russian troops would remain in Belarus. Naturally, none of this happened. It was all fake news. However, the United States, Canadian, German, and British contingents, which were pulled up under the pretext of neutralizing Zapad 2017, have stayed and are still there in the proximity of the Russian borders. Comments are unnecessary. The fact that we are not welcome at the US Congress, a place where all kinds of hearing commissions and investigations on so-called Russian dossier take place, speaks for itself. Members of the Russian parliament reached out on multiple occasions to their American counterparts with an invitation to visit Moscow or to meet in the United States. No reaction followed. By the way, I have not succeeded in arranging a meeting at the Capitol either. It's very strange for me. There is no opportunity for Russian diplomats to explain how we understand the current situation in the United States, how we understand the situation in Russian-American relations to distinguish members of Congress. They don't want to speak, or maybe they are scared to speak to me or to my colleagues. But how it is possible to construct bilateral pragmatic relations? It's impossible to create anything without conversation, without dialogue. The logical outcome of this kind of policy is unfortunate, a heavy burden of mutual distrust and missed opportunities of pragmatic cooperation. Naturally, we cannot tolerate attempts to put pressure on us and reserve the right to decisively respond to hostile actions. The Russian side, however, does not seek confrontation and is open to improving the bilateral dialogue. It can only be achieved if the relations are built on the equal and mutually respectful basis. By the way, you see that before my departure to the United States, I visited a few senior ministers of Russian government. And I would like to send this message to you that they would like to cooperate. They would like to promote good relations between the United States and Russian Federation. Mr. Putin has received me on the eve of my departure to the United States. And one message I got from him, that we need pragmatic, equal relations between the United States and the Russian Federation. One should not forget that Russia and the United States, as permanent members of the UN Security Council and two largest nuclear powers, bear a special responsibility for maintaining global peace and security. Therefore, despite all negativity, we should not shut off from one another, not look back at the past, but rather follow the strategic vision of our common goals. It is clear that the Russian and the United States' interests intertwine when it comes to the fight against global terrorism. The recent contacts between the Russian and the United States presidents on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Vietnam and their joint statement on Syria have proven that our countries need each other. They aim for coordinating their efforts to defeat ISIS, as well as to achieve a stable political settlement in Syria. We are united in necessity to address the challenge of non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. The fact that we have not reduced our efforts to resolve the Iranian nuclear program and to destroy Syria's chemical weapons, despite our strong disagreements over the Ukrainian crisis, speaks volumes. Today, developments around the North Korean nuclear problem are quite serious. In this regard, I would like to emphasize that Russia, as well as the United States, does not accept the nuclear status of North Korea. We have consistently advocated the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, but this issue can only be settled through a negotiated solution by diplomatic means. It would be inadvisable to test the strength of the North Korean leadership and provoke a rash countermeasure. Russia is committed to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Actions on the Iranian nuclear program as a successful example of cooperation in non-proliferation and an essential factor of regional stability. We consider it important for the participants of the plan to remove existing differences from the agenda through negotiations without reconsidering the agreement itself. It is evident that should the plan fail, it would be an alarming signal for the whole of international security system, including the prospects of resolving the nuclear problem of the Korean Peninsula. The issue of strategic stability and arms control was and continues to be one of the key points in Russian-American relations. Our bilateral dialogue on this topic has never been suspended, even during the most intense period of the Cold War. Over the past 50 years, joint efforts of both countries resulted in the creation of a legal base for the modern system of international security. Therefore, the Russian-American cooperation still has a crucial impact on key global process, as it is one of the pillars of the current world order. With that said, we consider that intent of the Russian and the United States presidents to develop relations in the spirit of balance of interest and search for mutually beneficial agreements to be highly important, which was reaffirmed during a recent telephone conversation between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. In order to transfer positive impulses from the highest political level to a practical dimension, our countries need to restore the broken means of communication. It is hardly possible to agree on anything through remote polemics and minimal contacts with one another. Lack of communication leads to a growing mutual distrust, especially considering the public rhetoric within political circles of the United States, reanimating an unflattering image of Russia. We suggest our American counterparts to resume a functional dialogue between our security councils, defense agencies, intelligence services, members of our parliaments. At the same time, we should get rid of everything artificial, which burdens our cooperation, removing multiple irritants in bilateral relations. The most sensible topic is the return of the diplomatic property which was seized from us. It is a paradox, as we have not only been deprived of our property, but are also not even allowed to check the buildings. What possible threats could the ambassador's visit to our compounds cause to the United States security? We still get a negative answer: to enter Russian property, Russian buildings. Nobody cares to specify the reasons. What we got from State Department, there is just only, you have no permission to enter Russian property. It would be important to establish a joint working group on cybersecurity in order to dispel doubts regarding who interferes where, what was the goal, and whether such an intervention really happened or this is just idle speculation. So far, the American side has failed to provide any evidence. We are just being told that the United States cannot present the facts because that there is a classified information. That way, one can come up with any charges so as to avoid speaking to the point. Cultural and humanitarian ties, as well as social contacts that help to strengthen mutual understanding and trust among our citizens, are of great importance. This area is less exposed to political environment, and it is definitely expected to bring positivity to bilateral relations. Our common history is one of the topics that brings the two nations together. This year, we are celebrating many milestones. Nobody is talking about it in Washington, but I would like to mention the 210th anniversary of establishing Russian-American diplomatic relations, 200th anniversary of the arrival of the Russian fleet to Hawaii, the 150th anniversary of the agreement to purchase Alaska, the 80th anniversary of the legendary flight of the crew led by Valery Chkalov from Moscow to Vancouver, Washington State. Our priority is to lay out on economic groundwork for the Russian-American relations, which would secure them from irregularities of the political atmosphere. The volumes of bilateral trade and investments do not meet the economic potential of both countries. Even if the better years, the trade volume never surpassed a modest sum of $40 billion in 2016, it was $20 billion. At the same time, I would like to emphasize that despite the sanctions, we host about 3,000 American companies with almost 180,000 employees and $75 billion worth of aggregate assets in Russia. On a regular basis, the American companies confirm that they have no intention of leaving Russia. Extra proof is an unprecedented success of the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum held in June 2017, during which the United States delegation managed to set an attendance record, 556 representatives from 140 companies. By the way, it's a quarter of all companies registered at the forum. It is highly important to preserve the positive aspects of the Russian-American relations during the current complicated political circumstances. Above all, it concerns the Arctic, science, and space exploration. American astronauts fly our manned Soyuz spacecraft. Russian-made RD-180 engines are still being acquired by the US to deliver payloads into orbit for NASA and, by the way, the Pentagon. Furthermore, the RD-181 engine is purchased and used in an Antares rocket to deliver cargo to the International Space Station. There are plans for joint implementation of large-scale project that could serve as a logical communication to the International Space Station. In September 2017, Russian space agency Roscosmos and NASA signed the statement on cooperation in creating the Deep Space Gateway circumlunar station. One could say that in space, we cooperate better than on the ground. Russia effectively implements the Mega Grants program, attracting leading foreign scientists to research and scientific breakthrough in our country. Over the 6 years of the work, 160 world-class laboratories were created, with plenty of grant recipients being American scientists who moved to the United States from Russia back in their days. The ties between Russia and America across the Pacific Ocean were always unique. Starting from the Russian-American company and its activities in Alaska to the settlement of Russian pioneer in California, Fort Ross, California. From the Second World War, Lend-Lease program, in particular with nearly 8,000 planes ALSEIP, moved from Montana through Alaska and Chukotka to Krasnoyarsk, to the oil and gas field of Sakhalin. The latter, including Sakhalin 1, have forever changed the face of our Far East and transformed the Russian island into one of the leading energy suppliers of the Asia-Pacific region. California has taken a major place in the relations between our two countries. We have the Chevron Corporation working for a long time in Russia along with Transneft as an operator of the Caspian Pipeline Consortium to deliver Kazakh oil to the Novorossiysk seaport. Since the early 90s, the Amur Machinery, a dealer of the Caterpillar company, supplies large construction machinery and equipment to the Russian Far East. Thousands of employees from Russia work in the flagship high-tech companies in the Silicon Valley. Cisco, Microsoft, Intel, Google, to name a few. The Russian-American Pacific Partnership has been active for more than 20 years. It is a unique platform for dialogue, which brings together officials and businessmen from the regions of the Russian Far East and the United States West Coast. The state of California is among the leaders of bilateral inter-regional cooperation. Over the past years, it established contact with the Republic of Tatarstan, Tumen, and Vologda regions. There is mostly due to the efforts of the state's current leadership. It is Governor Mr. Jerry Brown, who in September took part in the Eastern Economic Forum in Vladivostok in order to get acquainted with the economic potential of Russia and its Far East. The Fort Ross Dialogue, a bilateral forum initiating uniting social, political, and business circles taking place in the United States and now in Russia, as well as plays an increasing role in developing ties between the regions of Russia and the United States. It has proven itself to be an important informal platform for dialogue and development of a positive bilateral agenda which our countries desperately need. In conclusion, I would like to remind you that this December marks the 210th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Russia and the United States. Back in 2008-07, American President Thomas Jefferson wrote to the Russian Emperor Alexander I, quote, "I am certain that Russia is the most cordially friendly nation to us," unquote. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has repeatedly stated that we are not picking fight with the United States and have always had a positive attitude towards the American people. When we stood together, we always achieved success and triumphed over evil, tyranny, and prejudice. That is how it has happened during the American War of Independence, the First and the Second World Wars. We honestly want the bilateral political atmosphere to normalize. I genuinely hope that we will not remain hostages of each other's own prejudice. We cannot allow mutual complaints to undermine our ability to effectively respond to the major security challenges of the 21st century. Thank you very much.
So, we will start questions. The most interesting part of our conversation.
Well, thank you very much for that, those remarks, and for laying out a whole agenda of cooperation or potential cooperation between Russia and the United States.
Not only potential, but, please.
Yes. But
history of our relations, current status of our relations, and of course, you're right, potential.
Potential, yes. We are at a point where relations between our two countries are probably in worse state than they have been since the late 1980s, since the end of the Cold War. And there's a great deal of mistrust. And you are the new Russian ambassador in Washington. The U.S. has a new ambassador in Moscow, John Huntsman. And when he presented his credentials to President Putin last month, he said, "I look forward to working to rebuild trust between our two countries and to strengthening the bilateral relationship based on cooperation on common interests." It sounds to me from the remarks you made that that would also be a fair description of how you see your mission here in the United States.
You're right. Of course, it is very difficult to start working in the United States nowadays, frankly. As I mentioned to my new friends before our meeting, you said that the first news that I got when I left my plane was that the decision of the United States regarding the seizure of Consulate General in San Francisco. My daughter has sent me a short message saying that, "Father, be prepared. It's a lot of journalists who would like to see you, and they would like to get some remarks from you." So instead of going to my house, I was forced to go to embassy to start working. What to do under such circumstances? Of course, frankly, it is difficult, but you see that my official remarks, please, it's a lot positive elements in our history. Even during the Cold War, we reached drastic agreements regarding nuclear arsenals. Don't forget about the treaties like INF, START Treaty, and you see that this treaty is still alive, and it's very important that United States and the Russian Federation consider important to sit together and to tackle this issue. As I mentioned, you see that it's my understanding, it's not remarks that I got from Moscow, it's from my heart. When we are together, we can do a lot of. You see that one West diplomat said me during my courtesy call to him, If the United States and Russia are in quarrel, we can face a problem of North Korea. But when you are together, the whole world can sleep well.
You're listening to World Affairs, the weekly broadcast of the World Affairs Council. I'm Jane Wales, CEO. We're hearing from Anatoly Antonov. He's the ambassador of the Russian Federation to the United States. He's in conversation with David Holloway of Stanford University. And this event was recorded in San Francisco before a World Affairs audience. And now back to our moderator.
Well, let me follow up on the issue of nuclear weapons, which, as you mentioned, the U.S. and Russia are the two great dominant nuclear weapons powers, and you headed the delegation that negotiated the New START treaty with the United States. So my question is, you mentioned the treaties are healthy, but there is some commentary now that arms control, as we've known it, is not in a healthy state. I don't believe we have formal treaty negotiations going on. The INF treaty is under criticism from both sides. Are we at the end of arms control as we've known it, or is this a temporary pause? And if we don't have arms control as we've known it, how do we manage our nuclear relationship?
First of all, I would like to repeat your words. We need more trust. It's impossible, for example, to start negotiations tomorrow. It's necessary to make a lot of preparatory work for this. I remember 2009 and 2008 when we started our negotiations with the United States. You had excellent team, professional team, smart team, led by your former Undersecretary Rose Gottemuller. It was very difficult for her because there was a gap of negotiations between the United States and Russia. It was necessary to create something special for such negotiations. And for us, for the Russian Federation, it was difficult to do the same. But we managed and we agreed. We spent about, frankly, you said that 15, 17 hours per day together trying to understand what kind of concerns we had at that time. Of course, we can be criticized today by our opponents regarding this, provisions of this document, but at that time it was the best solution in the interest of the American and Russian people. You're right. We have bilateral conversations on various issues on arms control, non-proliferation, disarmament. Sometimes we have some differences, but we're great nations. We have our own interest, national interest. It's very important to respect national interest of each other. And if we can see such a proof from our partners, under any circumstances, we can find a solution. It seems to me that it's very important to continue such strategical dialogue. Strategical, what I mean? Strategical means disarmament, non-proliferation, arms control, altogether, in one bottle, if I can say so. So it's very important to continue such dialogue, even taking into account current situation in Russian-American relations. And we have started such dialogue. And there are two delegations from Russian side led by Mr. Repkov, our deputy minister, and from the United States led by Mr. Shannon, a very smart, experienced, professional diplomat. I met to him and discussed some issues of strategic stability.
So when you think about a strategy for improving Russian relations with the U.S., in your position, you laid out many areas of cooperation we've had in the past, I take that point, and also potential areas in the future. Which look to you to be the most promising in terms of moving the relationship forward?
Maybe you will be surprised, but as Professor and said, I served 6 years in Ministry of Defense. It was very difficult, frankly, for diplomat to be in the Ministry of Defense. But I got a lot of knowledge, experience, and I would like to say you, despite the differences between our military commands, it seems to me that we are very close to make a breakthrough on the cooperation between Pentagon and Ministry of Defense. And we have common goal. We have to get a victory over Daesh or ISIS. We are very close. We are together in Syria. We are fighting against global terrorism. And it seems to me that great potential capabilities we have. And it's very important not to think about just only national interest, but it's necessary to look at this problem from a global point of view, to understand what we get if we can achieve a victory over this devil. So I understand that maybe you are not satisfied with my answer, but I'm sure you see that a great potential for our cooperation in military sphere, it's one, and of course I don't want to repeat again what we already have. It's a base for a future cooperation. You said that the next issue I can I can mention, for example, it's North Korea. We are members of Security Council, and we are very much concerned what is going in North Korea. As I mentioned, and would like to emphasize it again, we never recognize North Korea as a nuclear weapon state, and we are together with the United States. There is a difference how to achieve this goal. We are in favor of diplomatic means and tools, and we are a little concerned that United States, how to say in diplomatic way, sometimes uses very sensitive rhetoric regarding the possible or potential actions in that region. We are very much concerned. You say that North Korea is our neighbor. And I repeatedly said many times to my colleagues that it's very easy to change wife, but it's very difficult to change neighbor. We are neighbors with North Korea, and we are very much concerned if there is any negative effect of nuclear test or missile test. And we have short, very short, of course, boundary, just only, if I remember, 137, but we have such a boundary. And you see that we have to calm down our emotions. We don't recognize and we don't support, we accuse them for undercutting peace and progress, but at the same time, we are nuclear weapon states, we are permanent members of Security Council, and we have to be very cautious regarding our potential actions in that region.
Mm-hmm. I'm now getting questions from the audience, and I think we can perhaps...
Maybe you will choose the most tough one.
I'm looking for the toughest one. I've given you a couple of easy questions to just make you feel relaxed. Well, in a spirit of cooperation. And
it goes without saying.
Yes, it goes without saying. But what I'm interested in asking you is, you've referred to a number of things in the United States, in your view, all the fuss that's being made about Russian interference in our election in 2016. And I'd like to come back to that question later. We will come back to it as well. But I wanted to ask you a more broader question. What, looking back, could Russia have done differently to avoid getting into this position? What?
I know. I just would like to remember some ideas that I heard in Moscow in various corners in our government, as well as in our Ministry of Foreign Affairs, as well as in Ministry of Defense, of course. I explain you, but I need 3 minutes.
Yes, that's...
We were very much flexible towards Western countries. We consider that it's very easy to come to a compromise with the United States, with other Western countries. We try to show flexibility, too much flexibility. I explain you. I participated in various rounds of negotiations in G8. You remember there was such format, G8, when Russia was a member of G8. I was responsible for arms control and non-proliferation. And I remember, when I agreed with Western countries, I was the good guy, smart guy, professional guy. But as far as I started to say, come on, you see that, let's come to another decision. You see that it's not meet my concerns, and I need some other phrases in the final document. I became tough negotiator.
It's a compliment, tough negotiator.
The same situation, I hope that many of you know about the situation with arms control in Europe. Conventional forces in Europe, adapted CFE, and so on and so on. I don't want to torture you with such formulas. Again, you see that from one side there were Western countries, and from another side were the Russian Federation. When we are together, as I said to you, everything was fine. But when I said, come on, you see that, I don't understand NATO. I don't understand decisions made in Brussels. And I explain you. You consider, I mean that my colleagues from Europe, from the United States, you consider that the threat is coming from south of Europe, from Iran. Yes, I understand. It is possible that you have such concern, and even you consider it is the threat. But why NATO is coming to my boundary? You have to go to the south. What is the problem with my country? And you see that I suddenly discovered from intelligence sources, from Ministry of Defense, that it's a lot of intelligence planes are flying along the boundary between NATO countries and Russia. For what purpose? I was explained that we are trying to protect our countries from terrorism. Please, I said, what kind of terrorism are you searching in the Russian Federation? What you are talking about? I don't understand you. That's why I would like just only to give you one example. It was my concern, and I failed to get concrete answer on this issue. So it seems to me that if during the, maybe during, in the beginning of this century, we were more tough, more understandable for Western countries, maybe we would not face the current status of our relations. By the way, it was said by my president, Mr. Putin.
Well, thank you very much. So let me now turn to the question of the election, which is, well, must... dominates the headlines, and which is the source, certainly my impression, of a great deal of distrust. Because the sense, partly because the election was so close, partly because of the evidence of the statements made by our intelligence agencies that there was an influence campaign. That Russia and the Russian Federation engaged in different kinds of trolling, different kinds of advertising, and so on, hacking and releasing documents to WikiLeaks and so on. And that's, I think, playing itself out, or at least we're going through a whole procedure or process of dealing with that in one way or another. So what is your response? I mean, your president has denied that you've engaged in those activities.
You would like from me that I agree?
No, I don't want to.
Tomorrow I will go.
You are
not,
a diplomat.
Not to Monterrey. I will go to Moscow.
I'm not asking you to challenge that, but I'm asking you how you think then this, you mentioned it at the very beginning, how it affects the relationship. How is this going to play out?
The situation is very delicate and complicated. Sometimes I raise a question to myself, whether American people has more problem than Russian interference in elections. I just explain some colleagues, you said that in this room, saying that a few weeks ago I visited Chicago for one event. You said that I entered hotel, switch on TV, and I saw CNN showing or trying to prove that Russia interfered into United States elections. You said that I changed my suit. Then I visited one restaurant where we had excellent dinner with my friends, returned back to my hotel room, and what I see? The same. The same. 3 hours. Just only about what? There are gossips, there are intelligence reports about, regarding Russian interference into American relations. You see that we raised this issue with our counterparts many times, requesting from them, if there is any opportunity to put proofs on the table, at least one, two proofs. It was mentioned that we hijacked or we interfered into a Democratic Party website, yes, and so on and so on. But specialists in cybersecurity know that it's very easy to interfere in your computer, for example, from Singapore. But it's possible to keep fingerprints in Russia. So that there is a real problem, cybersecurity. We have offered our American friends to sit together, to look at this problem, to find out what kind of problems, what kind of security challenges we face today, and to discuss, could we cooperate together? And do you think that we were in favor of one candidate or another in the United States? You said that, of course, I see you are smiling. You are smiling. I understand what it means. But you see that it's up to you to decide. You see that, and please raise a question to yourself: what kind of system you have if anybody can penetrate it?
Well that's.
It was said by all of your presidents that the United States is superpower. Nobody can defeat it. Please, what has happened with your security?
Well, in the end, that's not to many Americans a very convincing response to say that we do everything perfectly and because we're a superpower. I think I'll just recall the raising of glasses of champagne in the Duma when the election results came out. Yes. The Duma
they are
is not
members
very much
of our government.
Well, yes, then they are elected members.
Some NGO, by the way, also raised glasses with the champagne.
Yes, yeah. But the let me put it in a broader context. Your denials have not stopped the process going on. It's going to play itself out. In what way, I don't know. But there is a general problem. And this perhaps should be a topic for mutual discussion. What impact do the social media have on What we see is fundamentals of democracy, namely the possibility of open discussion, the possibility of transparency and access to facts when we discuss the policies that we want our governments to pursue, or when we're electing people to parliaments or to the Congress. So I think there's a big issue whether what's important here is the particular scandal or the more general issue of what's changing. And I'm wondering if that's a kind of area in which it would be fruitful to have cooperation, not only in relation to social media, but also artificial intelligence, for example.
It seems to me that it's high time for our intelligence and counterintelligence services sit together in close room to discuss this issue, to find solution, to get answers on this issue, and to stop speculation regarding the meddling of Russian Federation. Maybe it's not Russia. Maybe it's another country. I see a lot of cameras here. That's why I don't want to name other country of particular interest of United States, because we have some specific relation with that country. Why the Russian Federation? It's just only because of the problem between Democrats and Republicans. But I don't want you said that to interfere in your internal relations. I just would like to answer to your question. My proposal to you, the United States, to restore very sensitive links of communications between our intelligence, counterintelligence, and security officers, to start working together, because I would like repeatedly say that we are not enemies, we are partners. I don't want to say that we are allies. It's too early to say about it, but we were allies during the Second World War, and it seems to me that we are allies fighting global terrorism. It seems to me that it's high time for us to start constructive discussions about open, transparent discussions about security challenges that we face. If we have concerns, we have openly discussed them, but sitting together, but not through mass media.
Right.
It's very easy, you see, that to speak through mass media, just only to send one signal to say that, oh, come on, you see that I have one paper here with a very sensitive information, but I cannot disclose you, because that I don't want to betray my friend who has provided me this information. But I would like to say you privately that the United States, I don't want to continue this sentence.
Right.
And I will smile you, that's all.
Yeah.
So another mass media will take this information, then it will be circulation among other journalists, so it will be good fake news.
Our time is running out, unfortunately. There's so many issues to discuss. I have two questions I want to raise with you. One, of course, is Ukraine. This is a major issue in our relations. The US and indeed the European Union have taken a strong stance on the annexation of Crimea. And we have the continuing kind of low-level conflict in the eastern part of Ukraine. These are, since sanctions were imposed in response to Russian policy, this is a major obstacle to the improvement of relations. How do you think this issue can be resolved?
You have raised so many questions. It seems to me that we need 2 hours more. Of course, first of all, I would like to disagree that regarding the annexation of Crimea, and I don't want to waste your time to explain you Russian position on this issue. There was a vote organized by people of Crimea, and they decided to join us. The second, you said, by the way, do you know that I'm under the sanctions of European Union? And I would like to reveal your top secrets from European Union. For what purpose I'm on the top list? We got secret information from Europe that I run Russian troops attacking one of the towns of Ukraine. Personally, I am a diplomat. And because of my failure, you say that we didn't capture or seized the town, so-called Mariupol, you can check it. And so due to such action of Mr. Antonov, I have to be put on the stop list. Come on, you see that I'm a diplomat. And everybody knows what I have done in Ministry of Defense. I was responsible for international relations, military relations between Ministry of Defense and other ministers of defense of various countries. So there is a stupid, I don't know what kind of fake information, from whom they took this information. It's stupid, you see that. The second about Donbass. Frankly, you see that we are very much concerned. When I worked in Ministry of Defense, a lot of my officers had their parents, relatives in Donbass. And they entered my office saying, Mr. Deputy Minister, what is going on? We don't understand. You see that they, I mean Ukrainian counterparts, said that we are attacking our relatives' houses. So they think that we could kill our mothers and fathers. No, the situation is a different one. You see that we have Minsk agreement. Please don't forget that Russia is not a part of this conflict. Everything was mentioned in or is mentioned in the Minsk agreement. There is a sequence in these elements of Minsk agreement. What should be done? First, you see that withdrawal or there is a first should be ceasefire. The second, withdrawal of heavy armament, ammunition, and other elements. So there is a problem now how to fulfill it. There was a request from Western countries to protect peacekeepers or monitors, let's call them monitors from OSCE. Mr. Putin has decided to help. He has decided to agree with the idea to protect these monitors from the attacks from both sides. That's all. You said that there is other ideas to create a peacekeeping operation in this region. What we are scared? We don't want Russian people to be killed in Donbass, like it happened in Odessa, in other towns. We would like to see guarantees from Western countries, from the United States, that Russian people who are living there will not be killed. So that's why you said that all elements to protect lives of citizens, ordinary people, are stipulated in Minsk agreement. There is just only time for us to start implement this agreement.
We unfortunately have run out of our own time here. But I want to ask everyone to join me in thanking Ambassador Antonov for addressing so many issues and so well.
You've been listening to World Affairs, the weekly broadcast of the World Affairs Council. Ours is a membership organization, and we're dedicated to engaging the public in conversations that matter. You can reach us at worldaffairs.org. This program featured Anatoly Antonov, ambassador of the Russian Federation to the United States, and David Holloway, who's a professor of international history and political science at Stanford University. Our technical supervisor is Monte Carlos. World Affairs is produced in association with KQED Public Radio. I'm Jane Wales. Thank you for joining us.